This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
You can stick it to the man and big tech. Join our FTL social mastodon at social.freetalklive.com.
Long delays, faulty voting machines, and missing names on the voters' register. The report says some electoral observers were denied access to polling centers on election day. Partial results show the incumbent president, Felix Tshisekedi, with a clear lead over his rivals. But some of the leading opposition candidates have rejected the results and called for a rerun.
With FSN Spotlight, I'm Simon Marks, looking today at the visit to Moscow this week by India's Foreign Minister, S. Jaishankar. He met Vladimir Putin on Thursday at the Kremlin and confirmed that he has invited the Russian leader to visit New Delhi at some point during the new year. India has tried to strike a neutral stance on Russia's war against Ukraine, despite Western pressure to be more critical of Putin's aggression. But analyst Rajan Menon, with the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, says the relationship between Delhi and Moscow has a long history.
Well, this is a tried and true and tested relationship. The fact that he's gone back after about a year hiatus is not at all surprising. Russia and India have been joined very closely since, I would say, going back to the 1950s during the Cold War period. Russia was by far the most important arms supplier to India. There was a peace and friendship treaty signed between them in August of 1971. In the post-Cold War period, there's been a change, but the fact that Jaishankar has gone there to shore up and solidify this relationship is not the least bit surprising, nor is anyone in Washington surprised.
But India's large purchases of Russian oil have angered the Biden administration and thrilled President Putin. He told the foreign minister that Russian success hinges on India's direct support economically. With FSN Spotlight, I'm Simon Marks.
Our top stories again. Dozens of people have been killed in Russia's biggest bombardment so far in its war against Ukraine. Ukraine's Air Force says it's never seen so many locations targeted simultaneously with missiles and drones, with Russia using nearly every type of weapon in its arsenal, according to Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. And in the US, giant waves have triggered flooding and caused injuries on the West Coast. That's the latest feature story news. I'm Benji Hire in Washington.
Images of destruction are flooding in, and the worst isn't over.
This is the Liberty Radio Network, broadcasting the latest liberty-oriented audio content 24 hours a day at LRN.fm.
This hour of Free Talk Live is brought to you by Dash Digital Cash. Dash is the cryptocurrency designed to be used for spending. Rising fees have made Bitcoin useless for purchases, but Dash continues to have fees less than 1 cent per transaction, and its features ensure Dash is undefeated as the most useful cryptocurrency in the marketplace. From a technical standpoint, Dash transactions are irreversible and its network is protected from 51% attacks by their Chainlocks technology. There's no need to wait for a confirmation before considering a Dash transaction complete, so it's great for merchants. Dash is one of the oldest cryptocurrencies and is widely available on exchanges, including the decentralized Maya protocol, and in multi-crypto wallets. It's easy to get and use Dash. Start by learning more at dash.org. Big thanks to the Dash DAO for sending us 32 Dash per month to promote Dash on the air. Visit Dash.org to learn about Dash. Dash.org. The new fourth edition of Healing Our World, The Compassion of Libertarianism, will take your understanding of liberty to a deeper level and has over 1,300 updated references, new cartoons, and a foreword by Dr. Ron Paul. With discounts for multiple book purchases, the fourth edition of Healing Our World is a great gift for the liberals, pragmatists, environmentalists, and Christians in your life who think libertarianism is cold-hearted. Get yours today at healing.freetalklive.com and use promo code FTL for a $5 discount.
Imagine someone in your community getting in their car, turning on the radio, and hearing the Liberty Radio Network. You can make that vision a reality with your own micro radio station. Visit broadcast.lrn.fm to learn how you can put our programs on the air in your area. You can have lrn.fm running around the clock, and you can even add in your own local shows. Building a radio station is simple, but programming isn't. That's where lrn.fm comes in. Learn more at broadcast.lrn.fm. That's broadcast.lrn.fm.
Eleutheromania, the insatiable desire for freedom.
We have been enslaved for all our lives.
It's the new 3-song heavy metal EP from Captain Kickass.
The next ones, they will.
Available now on your favorite music app, or get it directly from CaptainKickass.com.
From the Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Benji Heyer. Dozens of people have been killed in Russia's biggest bombardment so far in its war against Ukraine. Ukraine's Air Force says it's never seen so many locations targeted simultaneously, with Russia using nearly every type of weapon in its arsenal, according to Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. Our Europe correspondent is Julia Chapman.
President Volodymyr Zelensky says Moscow fired 110 missiles, 87 of which were shot down by Ukraine's air defenses. Those figures would make this Russia's largest aerial attack since its invasion of Ukraine. A spokesperson for Ukraine's Air Force says a wave of suicide drones was followed by missile launches from Russia. They took aim at cities including Kyiv, Odessa, Lviv, Kharkiv and Dnipro, leaving several buildings damaged and people trapped under the rubble. Ukrainian officials have been warning that Russia was stockpiling weapons for a major attack.
Elsewhere, giant waves have triggered flooding and caused injuries in California. However, for some adventurous thrill seekers, the conditions on the west coast of the U.S. are offering unique opportunities. From there, Iris Spitzer brings us the details.
Powerful storms in the Pacific Ocean sent waves higher than 9 meters or 30 feet crashing up and down the California coast. Officials in several northern and central California coastal areas ordered evacuations amid concerns about widespread flooding and danger. 8 people suffered minor injuries in Ventura County in Southern California after a wave crashed over a beach barrier there. Despite the warnings, the heavy surf brought lots of Californians to the coast to see nature's power for themselves, as well as surfers from around the world looking to test their skills on the giant waves.
Argentina is withdrawing from plans to enter into the BRICS Club of Nations. In a letter to the leaders of Brazil, Russia, India, China and South Africa, recently inaugurated President Javier Milei said decisions taken by the preceding government are being revised. The South American state would have been admitted in the new year alongside Egypt, Iran, Ethiopia, Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates. And election chaos in the Democratic Republic of the Congo. A report into the presidential vote cites several irregularities, prompting religious leaders to request further investigation before a winner is officially declared. Chris Ochimringa has been following the story from Kinshasa.
The preliminary report of observers from the Catholic and Protestant churches in the DRC noted weaknesses in the planning of the December 20th elections. The polls were marred by long delays, faulty voting machines and missing names on the voters' register. The report says some electoral observers were denied access to polling centers on election day. Partial results show the incumbent president Felix Tshisekedi with a clear lead over his rivals. But some of the leading opposition candidates have rejected the results and called for a rerun.
Canada is such a fantastic nation state. The government there is so awesome that, let's not forget, they celebrated a Waffen SS trooper. All right, that's great. That's just awesome stuff, isn't it? Oh, and they did that while also, yeah, that's right, in the House, they had Vladimir Zelensky. There he is, right there, hanging out, because, you know, the Nazis of the Azov Battalion and the Sloboda Party, like Ole Tianibach, with whom John McCain and Lindsey Graham met Joe Biden. There were pictures of him shaking hands with Ole Tianibach. He was mentioned in that conversation between Jeffrey Pyatt and Victoria Nuland in that F the EU, that infamous 2014 FTEU recording that was gotten from their cell phones as they were putting together the government that the United States and NATO and the Atlantic Council wanted put in after the United States was involved with the overthrow of the Ukrainian government in 2013 in the Maidan coup. Isn't that great? That's what a just cheery all the way. You can't go wrong. Boy, you want some fun, just go up to Canada. They'll remind you of the good old days. And yes, a lot of people don't know that Canada is still actually part of the British Empire. That's why in order to institute the emergency thing, they have to go with, I can't remember what it's called, something like the royalty in council or something like that, or the king or the queen in council. And it's a representative from the British government who is part of the Canadian government, and they have to get final approval from this person. It's really weird. But even then, even if they get the final approval to go with emergencies, which Justin Trudeau didn't even wait. He just sent those horses out to trample people like you saw from Rebel News, you know, trampling a 76-year-old native Indian Canadian woman. Yeah, that sort of thing. Pummeling, hitting one of the Rebel News reporters. And you can see the welt on her leg later. He just went and did it. He didn't even wait for the Canadian Parliament to approve it. Maybe that was because they were too busy, you know, thinking about making their plans to bring in Volodymyr Zelensky and a Nazi. You know, I don't know. I'm just thinking about that. But hey, you know, we have to remember he was just following orders, right? Well, let's keep that in mind as we turn right now to a follow-up to something that we got to discuss yesterday with James Bovard. And I'll mention again, just real quick, if you get the opportunity. By the way, oh, and thank you, everyone, for your really nice comments about the conversation with James Bovard on yesterday's David Knight Show. I'm Gardner Goldsmith filling in for David. And yesterday I had my friend, a man that used to be just one of my heroes. Now he's one of my friends. Over the past, you know, 20 years or so, I've gotten to know James Bovard. A great writer for Freedom. His new book is Last Rights, sort of the follow-up to Lost Rights that was published about 10 years ago as he looked at the results of the Patriot Act, the growth of the FBI, things like so-called civil asset forfeiture, the war on drugs, which is, you know, incredibly immoral and unconstitutional. I've got a lot of bookmarks in here. I got to ask him a lot of good questions, I thought, hopefully, and thanks for your responses. You know, I wanted to try to pick sections that I thought people might say, oh, wow, you know, that's really, and there's even more there, but you're limited for time. So I thought we did a pretty good job, and I hope you'll get that. It's published by the Libertarian Institute, and they've also just published a new book by Tom Woods, and it's called Diary of a Psychosis. And it's, of course, about the lockdown mentality, the jab mentality, and all that stuff. And so now I want to turn to our friend Glenn Jacobs, because James and I both discussed what Glenn posted on Twitter/X yesterday. Glenn, of course, used to live up in New Hampshire. Former pro wrestler, went as the character Kane, has been in this house numerous times and had to stoop through the doorway because he's so huge. And I remember one time we walked down to get pizza down at this little store down in our town. And he's so huge, he can't escape his own physicality. It's not just that he's a celebrity, but it's that, you know, his body is so big, even if he tried to hide his identity, people would be looking at him, you know. It must be a weird existence. It's very strange. I guess you get used to it. You don't know anything different after a while, but very odd. It's different. But he posted this, and I'll read it to you in case you're listening. He says, Deborah Birx came to Knoxville in September of 2020. In a private meeting, she told us that bars and restaurants should be closed. She admitted the data didn't support it, but said it was necessary to send a message about the seriousness of the virus. That's marketing, not science. And, of course, up in Canada, they restricted travel between the provinces. But I did not discuss, and James and I did not discuss yesterday on the program, the post that inspired Glenn to post that information about that private meeting or closed-door government official meeting, because Glenn is now the mayor of Knox County in Tennessee. This came from Kevin Bass. Kevin Bass is an outspoken guy whose motto is live not by lies, the Solzhenitsyn line. He's been on Tucker Carlson's show. He's been published in Newsweek. And he's been speaking up about Deborah Birx and what is in her book. Now, we've heard about these things before, so I just want to give you another, you know, little echo, little reminder to carry this information with us. And hopefully people won't forget this stuff. As Tom Woods publishes his book, Time Goes By, just like 9/11, things start to recede in the past. The wrongdoers, should they get away with this sort of stuff? How do we call them to task? How do we keep the fire going? Well, at least we can talk about it, right? At least we can keep telling the truth. Do not live not by lies. Well, Kevin Bass, and hats off to Kevin, says Deborah Birx, from her memoir, explaining how, quote, 2 weeks to flatten the curve was just marketing for harsh, months-long lockdowns that she was already planning. Quote, on Monday and Tuesday, March 9th and 10th, 2020, we worked simultaneously to develop the flatten the curve guidance I hoped to present to the vice president at week's end. Let's just pause there and mention that that was the exact wrong thing to do. Precisely wrong. And it runs, even if it had been right, it runs counter to freedom on two levels. First, the areas where you run into conflict, where people start to argue about what the health policy should be, are public tax-funded areas. They combine everybody, and it causes what's called the tragedy of the commons, where everyone has different or slightly different opinions. Maybe some people might agree, but most people will disagree about exactly how that government tax-funded resource is going to be utilized or should be utilized, right? You can't reveal your preferences through the market because you're forced to pay for it. So everybody, it causes dissension and argumentation. That, to me, is not unity. That's being forced together in a corral. That's like putting hungry rats together in a box and seeing what happens. That's the state. They put you in the box. They wanted to put everybody in their homes. As Jay Bhattacharya, who wrote the introduction, the foreword to Tom Woods' new book, Diary of a Psychosis, also published by the Libertarian Institute, my friend Sheldon Richmond, one of the people who started it, Scott Horton on the board, he also helped start it. The idea of shutting things down and locking people down, putting them in their homes, the people like Jay Bhattacharya and the Great Barrington signers, Great Barrington Declaration signers, said, no, that's the wrong way to do it. You don't rely on unreliable jabs to get endemic status, some sort of what you think is herd immunity. You're not going to get herd immunity through so-called vaccinations, jabs. Because first, there's a time factor on, first, there's a question on how effective they are. And then if you are giving people a false notion of security, they're now out there and could be contagious. What did we hear? We heard, well, this is amazing. For the first time, we're actually finding that in people's noses, they have just as much of the viral material after they've been jabbed. Yeah, that's because they weren't working. And we're finding for the first time asymptomatic spread. Oh, you mean maybe people are getting symptoms after they got jabbed because the jabs aren't working, so they're getting sick. Maybe there's also a problem with the jabs themselves. Maybe that's actually the bigger problem long term. And if you actually just allow people to deal with what you say is this incredibly deadly virus, which had a 94.6% survival rate across all age quintiles combined, and a near zero rate for people under 18. Maybe if you had just allowed, as the people at the Great Barrington Declaration had signed, the healthy people, maybe if you had just said, I'm not going to mess with people, not even allowed. Maybe if you had just gotten out of it and let people decide for themselves, suggested that healthy people go out, get their natural immunity by acquiring the virus and building up their long-term cells for viral intervention, their T cells, then maybe you could then see the elderly and more frail people who were at home come out and you would have herd immunity and a lower chance of those frail people contracting the virus. Maybe that would be it. But you didn't do it that way. You said we've got to flatten the curve beforehand. You said the hospitals were going to be overrun. You lied and told people the hospitals were overrun when people were going out with cameras and finding no, they weren't. When hospital orderlies, nurses, and doctors were doing flash dances and line dances, flash mob routines that clearly had to have been choreographed. Where'd they get the time? I thought they were dealing with all these dying patients. When, in fact, if you look at and compare the flu deaths to the so-called COVID deaths, it's almost as if COVID was a label that they put on the seasonal flu. The other problem with the vaccines is not just whether or not they're reliable, but it's the time frame in which people get the vaccines and how long the vaccines work. You have two temporal factors there. One is, how long will they work to go backwards? We don't know. And, of course, with these, we saw week after week, they kept saying, well, you know, it turns out, as the former head of the CDC, Walensky, told us, well, yeah, now we can't really say that they're reliable in any way that they fight anything. Of course not. And then there's the time factor of when are people getting these shots, right? So some people might get the shots, and then later, are they now still immune? How about people who got it 6 months later? Should they be the only ones allowed out in the future once their immunity wears off? And even now, the federal government, as Russell Brand has mentioned on his show, and I mentioned it on my show on Liberty Conspiracy, they're putting out PSAs telling people that natural immunity doesn't last. That is the thing that lasts. That's the point. So we'll go back to Deborah Birx and her lies, literally admitting in her memoir, on Monday and Tuesday, March 9th and 10th of 2020, we worked simultaneously to develop the flatten the curve guidance I hoped to present to the vice president at week's end, which was the exact wrong thing to do. Getting buy-in on the simple mitigation measures every American could take was just the first step leading to longer and more aggressive interventions. We had to make these palatable to the administration by avoiding the obvious appearance of a full Italian lockdown. No sooner had we convinced the Trump administration to implement our version of a two-week shutdown than I was trying to figure out how to extend it. Yes, were you telling people about that, Deborah? 15 days to slow the spread was a start, but I knew it would be just that. I didn't have the numbers in front of me yet to make the case for extending it longer, but I had 2 weeks to get them. Well, you weren't going to get those numbers because they weren't real. And Glenn Jacobs pointed out in the meeting that they weren't real.
Cold and flu season approaches, Silver Lungs is ready to help you and your family through the toughest of the year by supporting your immune system and overall health. From our best-selling colloidal silver generating system to our entire line of silver-based skin gels, nasal sprays, soaps, and silver solutions, Silver Solutions remain one of nature's most powerful and least expensive antibacterial agents. Now you can produce your own for pennies a day in the comfort of your home using the breakthrough technology of the Silver Lungs Generator. Learn more today at www.silverlungs.com.
Are you a business owner? Are you confused by the complexity of the tax laws? We can help. I'm Dan Pilla, and I've been helping business owners solve tax problems for over 40 years. My book, The Small Business Tax Guide, shows proven ways to avoid all the common business tax problems. Don't risk your business. Go to danpilla.com to order your copy. That's danpilla.com. Order now and get a free 15-minute call directly with me, a $99 value. Go to danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com.
USA News Update. Maine's top election official is removing former President Trump from the state's 2024 Republican primary ballot. Maine Secretary of State Shenna Bello made the decision Thursday.
I was duty-bound to follow Maine law to ensure the candidates, all the candidates who appear on the primary ballot are qualified for the office they seek.
Bellows says Trump knew the risks for violence on January 6th and ignored them, which she believes disqualifies him from seeking office. Israeli tanks and warplanes are reportedly targeting central and southern Gaza as the Israel-Hamas conflict reaches its 12th week. Israel's defense minister says the attacks are a crucial step in the mission to dismantle Hamas. Times Square in New York City, the place to be for a New Year's Eve celebration. Sunday's festivities include performances by Flo Rida, Paul Anka, and Jelly Roll. John Schaefer, USA News.
Tejibo Tea Club's original Pure Pau D'Arco Super Tea helps build red corpuscles in the blood, which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer dies in oxygen. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit shopsupertea.com. The first word is shop, spelled S-H-O-P, then the word super, and then the word tea. The complete website is shopsupertea.com, or call us at 818-984-6100 Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-984-6100. ShopSuperT.com.
Have you heard the warning from the dead doctors don't lie guy? I'm talking about Dr. Joel Wallach. He says if you have a 4-inch medical chart, if you take prescription drugs for high cholesterol or high blood pressure, arthritis, joint pains, or other health issues, the medical profession is failing you. They're using you for an ATM machine. That's what he says. He has a free lecture revealing what pharmaceutical companies don't want you to know. There's been groundbreaking research and discoveries on how to effectively treat or eliminate over 900 different diseases naturally. And it's all in this free lecture called Deadly Recipe. You want it free? Call them toll-free at 855-79-YOUNG. You ready? 855-79-YOUNG. Dr. Joel Wallach, the dead doctors don't lie guy, says there's no reason why we shouldn't live to be at least 100 and have a great time getting there.
Appreciate what we do? Help us advertise, market, and promote for just $5 a month at amp.freetalklive.com.
We return with Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live. I'm Gardner Goldsmith. Thanks so much for joining us. You can follow me on Twitter/X at Gard, G-A-R-D, Goldsmith, G-O-L-D-S-M-I-T-H. There is no such thing as public health. There's no such thing as public safety or public security. That's the state telling you that your security can be sacrificed for what they say is the good of all. That's the state telling every individual, you are always an individual. You don't blend into some gelatinous mass when you're out amongst people in this area or that area, or you're part of this demographic group or that demographic group, or whatever the politicians want to fascistly and facetiously tell you are part of. You are an individual. There is only individual health. And the idea that the government can then impose its will on you, whether it's by taking your money or taking your opportunities or forcing you to stay inside, taking your other liberties, so-called for the protection of the public health, means that every individual who remains an individual is always a target for the government, which then undercuts the very logic of the government saying that they're working for so-called public health. Because if everyone can be a potential victim, that means that the agent of threat is actually the state, the government, that claims that for everyone, everyone can be a potential victim. That's a QED. It's a non-starter, logically. Aristotle could have talked about that. You could get this in a sixth grade logic class. But politicians don't seem to get it. They love to put that rhetoric out there. They love to promote, well, it's for the public. It's just like the Marxist, neo-Marxist, cultural Marxist idea of always finding the little guy. Because hidden behind their message is, well, if you don't agree with this, you are oppositional. You are a danger. The Karens out there in politics are going to call the cops if you're walking your dog without a mask. The little guy has to be protected. That person who's frail and invalid, they've got to be protected by force, not choice. And this is the final point that I'll make. As a free market proponent, I try to stress the importance of private property and individual choice revealing preferences. We don't know how much security people want when it comes to viruses unless we let them choose. And the only way that we can let them choose is to let them control their property and their interactions. So the less often you have these public places where everybody's opinions are thrown together into the tragedy of the commons, the smaller these areas of political control, the better it is. And if you can pare away even those small areas of political control, if you go to private property, then you get real individuals choosing, do I want to go into that shop? I wonder what they're like. What's their security protocol? How much information do I have on the threat? As people see other people interacting and what happens to them, they start to say, well, do I want to go into that home? What's it like? Do I want to stay in that hotel? What are the locks on the doors like? What's their cleanliness like? Do I want to eat at that restaurant? What's their reputation like? Have I been invited to a party? What's that person like? Do I go to this private school? What's their policy like? Do they protect kids? Do they have gender-neutral bathrooms, right? Not imposed on everybody, but choices. Toy stores. What's in the toy store? Revealing preferences, rising and falling based on what you're offering. If you had private property rather than government-run areas, then people could say, this is my viral security protocol. This is what it's like. Do you want to come in? Do you not want to come in? You can actually ask. And if you're not asking, you're not that interested, that's not my fault. I shouldn't be charged with that. That's up to you. The more often you have these voluntary areas of interaction, the more often you can see the results of people's own choices. And every time someone leaves one of those private arrangements, those private situations, they can then enter into a new one. And every time that happens, you see the manifestation of everyone's interests. Those security protocols are brought up. But with government, it's one size fits all. You can't have variation. You can't have experimentation. That's exactly what Deborah Birx was pushing. And now let's hear from Naomi Wolf. Good job, Glenn Jacobs, getting that information out. Here's Naomi Wolf, who's grown tremendously. As I mentioned when we were talking with James Bovard yesterday, James and I were both at a Free State Project conference here in New Hampshire. I think it was a year after I was speaking, Glenn was speaking. Naomi Wolf and James Bovard came up. They were guests and had a great conversation with both of them. And Naomi was, you know, she was very, very much on the feminist issues, that sort of thing, that were maybe typical sort of feminist things, very much in favor of free speech and that sort of stuff. But she had not really dug down into some of the agendas of the leftists and the cloaks that they wore, supposedly supporting freedom, when they were actually for statism and trying to portray people in a gaslight way who might oppose the growth of the state, trying to portray them as against the little guy, when actually they were not in favor of the little guy, those people who promoted the state. Well, Naomi Wolf posts this. She says, stunning admission. It's a repost from Eric Hartman. She says, yeah, okay, we really weren't thinking about what would happen after we helped to load those people into those boxcars. Of course, she's reminiscing, bringing back thoughts about criticism of Nazi Germany, of course. Very appropriate here. The public health mindset is very narrow, she said. That's because public health doesn't care about the individual. It only cares about the state. I want to go to this original post as we see Francis Collins, who was caught secretly communicating with Anthony Fauci on how they would counter Jay Bhattacharya and the others from the Great Barrington Declaration, who were giving what was solid, traditional medical advice and proved to have been correct. Do the regular idea of leaving people free to associate with each other, let the healthy people do what they want, suggest that the more frail stay inside until you get to a number of people who have contracted the virus, have been healthy, and now have natural immunity. Let's see what Francis Collins This is, of course, years now after he wrote secret messages to Anthony Fauci, but we discovered them. Thank you. Let's see what Eric Hartman has to say. And here is Francis Collins. What a guy.
As a guy living inside the Beltway, feeling the sense of crisis, trying to decide what to do in some situation room in the White House with people who had data that was incomplete, we weren't really thinking about what that would mean to Wilk and his family in Minnesota, 1,000 miles away from where the virus was hitting so hard. We weren't really considering the consequences in communities that were not New York City or some other big city. The public health people, we talked about this earlier, and this is a really important point. If you're a public health person and you're trying to make a decision, you have this very narrow view of what the right decision is, and that is something that will save a life. Doesn't matter what else happens. So you attach infinite value to stopping the disease and saving a life. You attach a zero value to whether this actually totally disrupts people's lives, ruins the economy, and has many kids kept out of school in a way that they never quite require.
Collateral damage.
So there, yeah, collateral damage. This is a public health mindset, and I think a lot of us involved in trying to make those recommendations had that mindset, and that was really unfortunate. That's another mistake.
Okay.
All right. As a guy, that collateral damage attitude, that's going to feed into our topic for the last hour, and that is going to be Douglas Murray and the callous attitude, the term, well, it's war. I don't think you understand. Innocent people get killed in war. No, actually, the traditional rules of war with a capital W, as it is written in the U.S. Constitution, are that you don't kill civilians. There isn't a term collateral damage in the traditional view of war. And yes, there were exceptions that cropped up, but that was supposedly the deal in war. The people who signed on to fight for the monarchs, people who got hired, the knights, the soldiers, they were the ones who put themselves at risk. And innocent people were supposed to be left out of it because it was state on state. People like Francis Collins represent a new kind of war criminal. Liars, cheaters, after the facts, excusing it. Well, it's public health, just like I said. You can be sacrificed. And they reverse it. They flip it to say, well, if we can just save one life, well, what you're doing is you are creating a situation where people who might want to handle their own lives can't be allowed to do so. You're destroying lives. That's what you're doing. And moreover, even if his decisions were right, even if all these decisions might have actually been the right way to go, which we knew right at the start they weren't. That's one of the reasons why NewsGuard was going after us at MRC TV, because I was publishing stuff at the start of the pandemic, so-called, that ran counter. So they were trying to silence us. MRC TV got shut off of YouTube often, had to come back. Luckily, they have teams of lawyers working for them. And, you know, we weren't going to change our perspective on these things. So Francis Collins represents not just bad decision-making, but the immoral idea that there can be a government decision-maker. Because the only way the government decision-makers get their money is by forcing people to pay for it. So all of it stems from immorality. So when we talk about Francis Collins, I'm reminded of something. I'd like to give this to you. Some folks asked me a little while ago, and this might seem a little tangential, but some folks asked me a little while ago, hey, Gard, why don't you talk about your fiction stuff? I said, oh, yeah, you know, I don't do that. So there's some fiction over at Amazon. The first novella that I got published is called Bite. And in it, at the back of it, there's a short story. And it's called Sigil. I'd like to read this to you. Let me know what you think. What can I express about this strange phenomenon that will not inspire within you merely a subtle sense of disquiet rather than utter, uncontrollable dread? To you, the tale I intend to recount will seem a trifle, the most ordinary of occurrences, dismissible as a simple twist of fate or the combination of average circumstances as seen through an old man's paranoid dementia. But to me, the witness of these preternatural events, it is a story so horrific as to implicate the devil himself. In my lonely and solitary existence here in New England, I have endeavored to trouble no one. The pale and silent snows of winter blanket my surroundings, delivering peace and tranquility to my once tormented soul. They bring to mind the deep arboreal stillness of my homeland, where a man might walk for miles and encounter no one. His companions, mute and unmoving, would consist of the majestic firs and brooding oaks, and the crisp air would fill his lungs and caress his skin. Invigorated and enlivened, he would march with a bounce to his step, planting his boots in the snow and delighting in the crunch of one against the other. I can recall with vivid clarity the varied colors of the wood, the deep green of the pines and the pearly white of the snow, the somber browns of the shadow-filled valleys, and the ghostly gray of my own breath billowing into the air. The frosted canopy had its own wonderful presence, and I encountered it like a subject does his king, with heartfelt and profound reverence. Many years have passed since then, the days and trying times accruing like layers of tarnish on silver. But the brilliance of those memories remains, of a time when I was young and vital, standing alongside my friends in a great and noble struggle. Tragically, almost all of them are gone now, buried beneath those knee-deep snows, their pale bones turning to dust in unremarkable graves. It is all too clear that I cannot return to see them, but I do have my memories. Although my loneliness is sometimes profound, I can relive those halcyon days by exercising my mind and thumbing through my careworn diary. My recollections from that time are set down in some 180 pages in an almost unintelligible script, written with an uncooperative fountain pen over the course of 3 years. The sheets themselves are yellowing and delicate, like centuries-old vellum, and bound in a brown leather cover, embossed with the glorious seal of my people. It may seem to you that all these images are rather sedate and bucolic. A cottage in the woods, the drifting snow, a cherished diary. Had I not experienced what I have, I might be inclined to agree, but such a judgment could not be further from the truth. Think me mad if you must, but it is these very underpinnings of my ordinary world that have conspired to drive me to paroxysms of fear, the sort of chill terror that is unvanquishable and unrelenting. Winter evenings here can be very cold. The air can numb one's skin, and great harm can be dealt the delicate constitution of an old man. I, therefore, wisely retire early, retreating to my familiar rocker by the fire, where I wrap myself in homespun Yankee blankets and contemplate the leaping flames. How lively they are at times, rising up as if to engulf my entire world. Their lambent orange glow is more than sufficient to illuminate the cottage, the pop and crackle, the only sounds in the haunting night. On my lap rests my diary, a tiny looking glass to days gone by. As I scan the pages and remember, a curious sensation of warmth overspreads my aged form, bringing with it contentedness and lethargy. The scribbled words speak clearly to me from long ago, telling those familiar stories I hold so dear, and I cannot help but feel a pang of emotion upon reading them. Occasionally, I am even driven to weep. Perhaps it was the salt water coalescing in my eyes, or a manifestation of my failing sight. But 3 nights ago, as I felt slumber coming on, something most peculiar occurred. The fire was slowly dying, its light retreating to the interior of the wood, and I sat content in my warm and comfortable chair. I had been fighting off drowsiness with an ever-weakening resolve, hoping to finish a particular chapter written in 1942. Had I been a younger man, perhaps I would have stayed awake, listening to the howl of the frigid wind. But as it happened, my head began to nod, my chin to rest on my shrunken chest, and my eyes to close. It was then, when I was most susceptible, that it happened. As I tried to remain awake a moment longer, the letters on the page seemed to move, shifting ever so slightly. I dazedly blinked and came back to myself, but the odd moment had passed, and there being nothing remarkable to see, my eyes quickly lost their focus. I proceeded to fall into a deep, uninterrupted sleep. This sequence of events occurred on the night following as well, in precisely the same manner, under entirely similar circumstances. The fire had expired, the room had grown dim, and the grieving furies wailed like tormented souls outside my little cabin. But what my eyes beheld this time, as I retained that final bit of self-awareness, made me jerk awkwardly to life. The ink had blurred and moved as surely as I breathed. And, most unholy of all, a word had appeared. I stared at the faded script on the page, but like quicksilver, the message was gone. I was left with only an impression of what had been, a fleeting impartation of something horrid and unspeakable. The diary invited further investigation, but I could not bring myself to read it, to read what I knew to be the simple recollections of a young man. I shivered convulsively, and suddenly aware of my age and solitude, I sought the refuge of my bed. When I awoke this morning, all memory of that uncanny experience had vanished from my mind. The day was bright and sparkling with possibilities, and although I first drifted about absent-mindedly, as if there were something important that required my attention, I quickly shed my listlessness in favor of a stroll through the woods and some late afternoon hours spent collecting fuel for the fire. I returned to the cottage tired but contented, and recalled with a smile those days I had exhausted myself in the service of my country, marching back and forth along the stark, frozen perimeter of our camp. A hot meal, a beef stew, and a touch of sherry to rekindle my heart, and I was ready to recline by the hearth. My belly was full and my spirits were high. But as I settled into the old rocker with my diary in hand, a strange sense of unease seized upon me. It was slow to comprehend, building ever so gradually, but it palpably existed nonetheless. The twilight and the glow of the fire reminded me of something, something from the previous night that I should have recalled, but could not. Like a half-forgotten dream, it was a word. A word. I must have slipped into an uneasy sleep then, for when I opened my eyes sometime later, the fire had died. Outside, the pale face of the moon shone just over the blackened tips of the trees, and it cast strange shadows on the floor. Perhaps I was still in a dreamlike daze, but looking at those otherworldly designs, I felt a peculiar chill grip me, as if something most foul had found deliverance from the grave and touched me with its cold and lifeless hand. I rose, gripping my diary to my chest, and hastened toward my bed, where I thought I might find peace. I moved stiffly, without much grace, my thin legs weak and unsteady. Coming to rest upon the mattress, I laid my diary down on the night table and slipped beneath the covers. I shut my eyes and for some time sought the intoxicating nectar of sleep. It remained elusive. The moon rose higher, and my unease grew. I felt that the letters in my diary had tried to tell me something. I knew it was a warning, a premonition of the future. Of that, I was certain. But the meaning remained unclear. I sat up, propped against the pillows, a weak, frightened old man, staring into the gloom. My body lay before me, spent and emaciated, covered by blankets as if by a death shroud, repulsing me, reminding me of them. Confused, I turned away. I tried to avert my gaze, but my eyes fixed on the blanched flooring of the room as I listened more closely to the howls beyond the walls. The howls, like tormented souls. And I understood. The moonlight, shining garishly through the twisted limbs of the denuded forest, slid slowly across the old planking of the floor, and in the swirling grain of the faded pine, I saw their faces, twisted and tortured, screaming at me like inhuman beasts, their mouths tearing apart, eyes bursting with fear. They were the faces of the past, the faces of the camp, and I had seen them all. Before I fell asleep, I ventured one last look at my diary, at the cursed black insignia emblazoned on its cover, and I knew the word I had read. I closed my eyes. The word was hell. So that's for you, Francis Collins. Hope you enjoyed it. That's for you, soldiers who go out and commit war crimes. That's for you, former Waffen SS trooper. May you ask for forgiveness for your soul. That's for you, Anthony Fauci, Donald Trump, EcoHealth Alliance, Paul Zazak. We'll return with more Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live. Thanks so much for
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to MySolarBackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's MySolarBackup.com. Look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at MySolarBackup.com.
Both my legs were amputated due to an IED. It's when you start to try to get back into, like, an everyday life. I absolutely felt like I lost some of my purpose. There must be something more. When DAV came into my life, they gave me a new mission. I could still be a productive member of society, could still support a family.
The DAV gave him that sense of structure and purpose again to get his life back together.
Visit DAV.org to learn more about our mission.
As Dr. Wallach says, we all have nutrient deficiencies in our diets and must supplement with 90 essential nutrients in proper balances. At no cost or obligation, get a personal certified holistic health coach to help you develop a supplement program based on Dr. Wallach's recommendations. Call Linda at 833-VITAL-90. That number to call is 833-848-2590. That's 833-VITAL-90.